have you with us as we are getting ready for another radio program. We've had a pretty interesting start of 2010. A lot is going on as usual, and today we're going to go into the depths of the occult, mystical, magical, and if you will, even demonic today with our guest Michael Wynn. You might know of his work as Risen. He's behind the website HollywoodInsiders.net. I recently came across a few of his videos, specifically one called Magic and the Matrix that I want to talk more about here today. He has more videos, articles, and information on his website on various topics, among other things, black magic, symbolic, esoteric subjects, and occult subjects as well. Hollywood Insiders is a documentary series focusing on Illuminati and Freemasonic influence and symbolism in Hollywood. And I've invited Michael to the program to talk about his various his research in regards to various demons and entities, movie symbolism, and also the Necronomicon, a interesting book that has been around for quite some time now in different versions with different authors. But we're going to explore some of Michael's work here today, his research, and some of his films. So good to have you with us, Michael, and welcome to Red Ice Radio.
Thanks a lot, Henrik. I've got so much respect for what y'all do at Red Ice and the fact that y'all are not scared of any topic or anything like that, so it's really an honor.
Excellent. It's good to have you, Michael, and you're a new voice to us. Don't know if you've done any other radio programs before, but I think a good idea would be to just, we can talk a little bit about yourself, your background, and specifically then your website, HollywoodInsiders.net. When did you start this up, and why did you want to kind of go into this area, Michael?
Well, around 2006, I became 9/11 aware, early 2006, and I ran into all the usual suspects, Alex Jones, David Icke, Tazarian, you guys. I ended up finding a lot of things from movies that were reflected in my New World Order research, and piece by piece, you know, like stuff like about George Lucas and his connection to the Illuminati. So I started to notice that there were strange things happening in movies, that we were being told a very real story in the movies. And I just started making a series out of it. And as for the website, that's only just recently. This was never meant to be anything more than one or two, and it ended up being four videos, five videos, something like that.
So how are things going in terms of your series? Do you feel that the more you cover, the more it is to explore, and it just goes deeper and deeper, or are you feeling that you're beginning to wrap up the subject at this point?
Well, it always goes deeper and deeper, as we all know, but I am getting close. I feel like I am getting close to the deepest secrets, that's for sure, which I ended up finding out were magical, which was a shock. But I just keep, when I find enough information out there that isn't in video form and isn't in conspiracy land, I make a video about it. And it's usually about movies and using movies to convince people.
Okay, very good. And how is it in terms of, if we talk generally a bit about magic and of course black magic in specific, then what's your approach to this subject? Do you feel that it's you know, really something to it? Does it actually work, or do you feel to, I guess, put it in the terms of what Balkan, the character from The Ninth Gate, says, is it all mumbo jumbo, as it says in there?
It is certainly not mumbo jumbo. You know, the Illuminati, they have an angle, because there's so few of them, and yet they've managed to commandeer the world. And you would have to have some kind of advantage that is just beyond comprehension in order to accomplish what they have. And so I had to come to the conclusion that they were using some kind of angles, and it ended up being magic. And this is how they've managed to commandeer the world, a series of spells and everything.
Very interesting. And when you say the Illuminati, are you, because this is a broad term and we can even define that a little bit more, some people refer to it specifically and only to the secret society that potentially have emerged after it was banned in Germany, Bavaria, back in the back around 1780 or whenever it actually was banned, or are you using this term as a more general term for the global elite or the few controllers behind the scenes, so to speak, Michael?
Well, it's actually a collection of secret societies that are all bound together and share the same traditions and probably even the same magical spells. And this is not just a single group, but just a collection of groups who all have loyalty and fealty towards each other. This is not like a banker's thing or anything. This is purely black magicians and certainly a collection as opposed to the Adam Weishaupt Illuminati that you refer to.
Right. And do you think it's... are these people that we can see, you know, on the TV? Do they have a public, you know, face out there, so to speak? Or are you referring to the people that are, again, very much behind the scenes, and this is people we potentially even don't know the name of, so to speak?
Oh, a little bit of both, because they need people in the front that are definitely in the know, and they need people in the back, and so it's both. It's some of the people that we see every day. I mean, you've got Kissinger and plenty of people who have incredible power, and you clearly are in on it.
Do you think it's how should we put it, demonic, or do you think we're talking about potentially non-human entities at the top of the Illuminati? This is a question that many people return to over and over and over again, just for the simple fact that this agenda seems to be progressing over such a long time, extended period of time. I know that you discussed time, for instance, in your latest installment of the Hollywood Insider series, Magic and the Matrix, and we can talk about this as well or tie this in with it, but to me it seems like there must be another force, if you will, behind the scenes, because it stretches over such a period of time. What's your approach, or what's your theory on this, rather, Michael?
I believe you're absolutely right, because the agenda has transcended what we would consider multiple human generations, and they've been talking about building this new world order long before it was even a possibility, long before they even had a complete map of the world. So it's somebody else's agenda, because so many humans have struggled and fought to get this agenda through and then died, you know? I mean, it's clearly somebody else's work whose lifespan extends way beyond humans. And yes, I believe at the top of the pyramid you have spiritual beings that are not human.
So how do you think they operate into our world? And we can go into a little bit of the interesting aspect that you mentioned in regards to time as well, and different dimensions, basically, that we potentially are looking at a scenario where these beings, these entities or energies or whatever, however we want to define that, are at times seems to blend into our reality, and at times people might even be able to see them in one version or another. But they have abilities that we do not, because they're not limited by the dimensions that we are. Michael, tell us about this.
Well, in the video, I pretty much just try to give everybody a very easy way to imagine extra-dimensional beings, because it's still hard, you know. It's very difficult for the human mind to even grasp four dimensions and above. And so I felt like I should draw an analogy to help people understand how it works. And how it works is basically like... In the video, for instance, how I drew the analogy of a human and a bird having access to this extra dimension. And so, you know, you could fence a human in, but you couldn't fence a bird in. And it's very similar to how you can't really fence in a ghost. And yet there's all these kind of questions about, you know, how is it that the ghosts are subject to gravity, but at the same time they can walk through walls. So some very interesting questions start to emerge about their abilities and
yes.
How they're coming in and out and the extra dimensions themselves, and how when one dimension closes in on another, for instance, the objects in those two parts might interact during that time. And so that's another thing that I went over.
And it seems to be a kind of a blending at certain points in time. Then there is one kind of major point that you bring up in your video, which fascinated me as well, because it seems to be that only at certain times the dimensions have, for whatever reason, an ability to blend more. There seems to be a communication, if you will, then between dimensions at these times. This can, as you elaborate on in the video as well, has to do even with astronomical alignments, the positioning of planets or stars, because it actually helps to bend and curve time-space, if you will. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Well, you don't have to do too much research into magic before you realize that certain beings can only be invoked on certain nights, and that you can only contact certain spirits on certain days. And I found that kind of interesting, because that means that they're subject to some set of rules. And in the Necronomicon specifically, it speaks about these spheres as if each dimension is in fact a sphere, which is how Einstein described spheres, described a universe as this ball that's just expanding, and that's pretty much the same terminology used in the Necronomicon. And in the Necronomicon, they're described as constantly wandering, and sometimes these universes bump into each other. Sometimes the bubble of one will bump into the bubble of another, and during that time, something can be seen from that other universe and interacts, and so that's that.
Really interesting. And so in terms of Necronomicon, when did you get your eyes up to this first? Because again, as I mentioned in the introduction here, there's many different versions of the Necronomicon, various authors as well, but it seems to have a root. It goes back into the ancient world almost, if you will, and it compiles a lot of different knowledge about demons, about mythological, potentially then, characters that were around from the Babylonian, Sumerian, Akkadian world almost. But when did you first look into the Necronomicon, Michael?
I accidentally downloaded it as an ebook, and I just read through my ebooks, as I always do, and I stumbled across the more complete version of the Necronomicon, the first one. The first one was written by a man named Abdul al-Hazred, right around 730 A.D., and was translated by Dr. John Dee about 1,000 years later. And then right around the beginning of the 20th century was moved into a library at Harvard University. Since then, like you said, there's been many Necronomicons, but the Necronomicon that I read, or all of them ring true, but the one I read had so many connections to other books, satanic stuff, and it used terminology from every single mythology, and it just seemed to ring true. So at the end, I didn't really care whether people thought it was H.P. Lovecraft or whoever. I didn't really care who wrote it. It was so full of the truth that I was willing to analyze it.
And indeed, you have it. There's many interesting aspects that you bring up in regards to this, and even the story of Abdul al-Hazred is very interesting as well. I think he was referred to as the Mad Arab as well, I've seen in some texts. And he has some kind of knowledge here, it seems like, then, to basically what is going on in the other realms, in the other dimensions. But is there anything else you can mention about this character, Abdul al-Hazred? Where did he come from, and do you know how he got access to this knowledge?
Well, this is so far away in time, this is so long ago, that direct records are very difficult. You're pretty much just going to have to infer a lot of information as you read through his text. It appears as though somebody who has crossed into the other side and then came back to our side to tell us what was going on, which is not usual. Usually everybody in the Illuminati just stays quiet and keeps all their secrets to themselves. But this book appeared to be a little different.
And what can you say in terms of the Lovecraft connection, H.P. Lovecraft, because he's another character which seems to go into some of these deities as well. He obviously have written about Cthulhu and things and characters like this, other demons. But Lovecraft seems to have an interesting connection there as well. Have you looked into him and his work as well, then?
Sure. It appears as though he built a lot of his mythos, is what is called the mythos, based on a real book, the original Necronomicon, and it seems as though he just pretty much is rewriting stories. What's interesting is you won't find anything from the Simon Necronomicon, any other Necronomicons, or H.P. Lovecraft that violates or contradicts the original Necronomicon, the original version. So, yeah, I've looked into it, but it's clear that they're sharing some kind of secret tradition. There's some kind of secret tradition happening in the background where he just started taking names from a document that did exist, probably within the Illuminati circles.
And specifically if we talk about some of the things that are contained within these documents and in the various versions of Necronomicon and so forth, what is the general outline? Is it about how to invoke various gods, getting contact with the demons or beings then that are from outside of our own realm, but still seems to be very much connected, if you will, with the mythology that we have here on Earth. If we look back to the Sumerian, as I mentioned before, and Babylonian gods, for instance, that are a lot of names from their mythology that comes up in these texts, isn't that right?
Yeah. The book goes through stuff that I had only found in very obscure places, mentions of, you know, the nine gates, gates to heaven and hell, portals. The book itself is not entirely a grimoire, like a completely demon-conjuring book. A lot of it includes just the history of man and the nature of the demons and what abilities that can be granted. So it's the nature of the gods and their respective personalities. So it's a demon conjuring manual, but it's got a lot of other stuff in there, things that sound like Atlantis and you know cities at the poles. He just mentions so much. He covers so much ground, UFO sounding descriptions, and just covered so much ground.
What are some of your favorite parts? Is there anything specifically in there that kind of catched your attention right away? Something that you felt, oh, this I got to look into this area because this is interesting.
The nine gates, frankly. The nine gates, I had heard that in many satanic texts and documents from various places, the nine gates was the first thing that rang true for me, because I had heard that in many places where you could use a gate to go to other dimensions, and that's exactly what he started to describe. And then you got stuff like the movie The Nine Gates, which kind of lays it all out for you in a joking manner, but it was the nine gates, the ladder of lights that, you know, that the Masons acknowledge and the Persians acknowledge, and there's the ladder up into heaven. It had a lot of things in it that were downright true.
So what's your analysis a bit, if we talk about the film a little bit more, the Ninth Gate? Polanski, of course, Roman Polanski, behind this one. He's made a lot of interesting films throughout his career. He's, of course, right now, don't know how this process is going, but he's obviously been banned from the U.S. because of a pedophilia case that happened a while back, and back in the 70s or something like that, and he hasn't returned to the States since. But when he took a trip over to Switzerland, I think it was extradited to the U.S. or if it was France or something like that. I can't remember the whole story right now, but what do you think Polanski is doing there in the film, and what do you think is kind of purposes for bringing this onto the scene, making it known, if you know what I mean, to people generally?
Well, they're not afraid to make it anything known. They, you know, they put their symbols on the dollar bill. It's just another way of them laughing at you. A part of my series is that they are telling a very real story, and they just keep retelling the same stories, and as long as people aren't looking for it, they won't find it. So I don't think he has any other agenda aside from hidden in plain sight, which is very typical of them.
Yes, absolutely. So if we talk a little bit more about the nine gates, there is, you know, potentially cabalistic origins to this as well. We're talking about different spheres, basically, of dimensions, and tapping into these different spheres or going through these different gates give them people potentially access to different beings that are residing in these realms. And there seems to be even hierarchies in these realms and so forth. And in your work and some of the documents that you go through, is it explained, for instance, in the Necronomicon, how it's structured and what entity, so to speak, belongs in what dimension or behind what gate, things like this?
Yeah, he does give you details on how to open the respective gates, the god or goddess that you will find on the other side. He doesn't give too much description on what it looks like. It's mainly the characters that are there. And a lot of the gods that we know of, you know, sun god, conspiracy theorists, Ishtar, we've all heard Ishtar, and a lot of the names that he said are gods for these particular realms are names that we've heard. As for the gates themselves, the first seven are, I guess, what you would call the safe zone, and the last two are just like what you would call the abyss or hell.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. And the abyss, of course, is something that Lovecraft wrote extensively about in that sense, how to go into the abyss and things like that. And if you look at it more from a objective point of view, would you say that it's all evil in that sense? Because when I looked at your presentation, I also got the impression that there's various instructions on how to contact, if you will, then a little bit more positive entities as well. It tries to give potentially a more balanced view of how the hierarchy exists in these realms. Or do you think I'm off when I mention that, Michael?
No. What's interesting, and I didn't even know this for a long time. I knew it before I read the Necronomicon. But you can conjure up, allegedly, you can conjure up archangels, angels, and then your own personal guardian angel, and actually speak to these characters directly. And from what I gather, it requires you to pass through the ninth gate or the eighth gate in order to have to sell your soul to where there's no turning back. Something like that. But the first seven can be, the first seven gates you can travel apparently without having to make any huge commitments. The demons are usually always the ones who execute spells. So it's evil in the way that because it's who it's doing, who's actually executing your wishes.
Yes, I see. And who do you think is using who here, so to speak? Because this is always interesting. It seems that some of these human beings that are attempting some of this work are doing it to get earthly advantages in many cases, it seems like. There might be more to this, obviously, and then there might be aspirations of eternal life or more power here on Earth or something like that. But in some cases, it also seems that the demons, if you will, then on the other side, needs us for specific reasons as well. They use us for different things. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit. We have the whole idea of energy or them using our emotional energy to kind of feed off on, if you know what I mean.
Yes, well, they apparently humans radiate some form of energy as we experience high-powered emotions such as fear, hate, lust. We radiate these emotions as some form of energy that they can eat. Also, they need us to open the gates because without us, they are forever stuck outside in the outer realms, in the abyss. So they need us in order to get them out every once in a while.
And, you know, funny enough, before I stumbled over some of your videos online, I kind of synchronistically actually rewatched Monsters, Inc. Before that time. And it was interesting to see that you brought up this in your film as well and referenced some of the scenes from that movie, because that seems to be kind of a children's version, then, if you will, of what they're talking about here, and potentially what even the demons or the quote-unquote monsters on the other side need. Again, our energy, and in some way that seems to power their dimension or power their needs or food for them, if you know what I mean.
Yes, well, the Monsters, Inc., aside from the obvious all-seeing eye that's displayed throughout the movie, is another example of just hidden in plain sight where, you know, as you said, it's a children's cartoon, but they're kind of telling you what's going on. A bunch of monsters arrive out of portals, they scare the crap out of you, and they drain you for energy and take it back to their place, you know. It's just another example of them putting the truth in your face, and as long as nobody actually does the research, nobody notices it.
What do you think the reasons there might be? Do you think the directors, if you go into a little bit more specifics on movies and Hollywood in general, are the directors in many cases aware of this, or do you think stories are handed to them, do something on this, it's being advised, if you will, then to put this into the mainstream and feed this information into the collective mind, if you know what I mean, or is there something else going on there? What do you think?
No, they're definitely on the inside. There's a little bit too much truth to a lot of these movies that we see to have been a coincidence. I usually don't focus on the director as much as I focus on the writers who actually wrote the script.
Yes.
Because it is them who decided the comings and goings of the characters and their nature and their history and their relationships between each other. So when I'm looking for one of those stories, it's usually I usually go to the writers as opposed to directors or any other the actors. I don't worry about any of that. And they are doing it on purpose. This is not an accident.
So what can you say about the Hollywood and the Kabbalistic relationship? We've seen some of the lately news here and there. We see actors, but I would guess then also as well writers that you mentioned or directors potentially are fascinated with Kabbalism and some of these things as well. And it seems that Hollywood is steeped in this. There's even inside information in regards to the different various, if you will, occult Eyes Wide Shut style gatherings that are going on there as well. What can you say about this, Michael?
Well, the Kabbalah is merely a reflection of what the Illuminati already believe. They are big believers in the facts that are laid down in the Kabbalah. So it really doesn't shock me that their religion surfaces in their movies and in popular culture, and that shouldn't shock anybody. You don't have to do too much New World Order research before you run into the Kabbalah. So their belief structure is very similar to how the Kabbalah views the universe, the multiple universes and everything that the Kabbalah entails, how as above, so below. A lot of the stuff from the Kabbalah is just straight out of Illuminati handbooks.
Again, we have this idea of the nine gates, if we go back to that, and there seems to be a relationship to the Kabbalah there as well. Specifically, I think they have 10 spheres or sephiroths, as they call it. There is allegedly an 11th one as well that is hidden, called the Doth or something like that. But what can you say about the relationship between the Kabbalah and these nine gates? There seems to be some similarity there, right?
Well, if you have 10 separate universes and 9 gates, if you have 9 gates, that means that you're in one place and then there's 9 other places to go, which adds up to 10.
Yeah.
So right there, like I said, I've heard the 9 gates and mentions of it in other satanic literature that has nothing to do with the Kabbalah or the Necronomicon. So that was definitely raised my eyebrows. The Kabbalah has a belief structure that the universe is broken up into separate universes and that there's a gate or some kind of passage between each point. And these points, as you said, were called sephira. But we're already very familiar with the idea of needing a gate to go through extra dimensions because, like in the Bible, you got the gates of heaven, you got the gates of hell. In the Book of Enoch, there's many mentions of gates. We're very familiar already with the idea of needing a gate as if there's a bottleneck point between dimensions, and we're very familiar with that already. So it's probably true.
Very interesting. And again, it seems to be very much about opening these doors then. You brought up the example of Ghostbusters, for instance. I think it's the first one, the first Ghostbusters, where basically the gates is open and the floodgates are wide open, so to speak, and the dimensions just pour into each other in that way. And it seems to be actually, if you want to use that terminology, some kind of singularity happened when everything becomes one rather than being divided up into these different realms or regions.
Yes.
Do you think that this is the point, if we can call it that, by the work that seems to be done on a greater scale right now to kind of try to blend these different realms and dimensions?
Well, eventually, everybody's prophecy comes to a day where there's an age of darkness and the humans just go nuts. In the Bible, for instance, you have the release of the locust, the opening up of the bottomless pit. In the Necronomicon, this was Azagthoth and his group of demons. Yes, there is going to be a time where two dimensions are going to be free-flowing between each other, and there's going to be quite a bit of chaos and quite literal darkness, not just figurative darkness throughout the world, but literal darkness.
What do you think this means then in that regard? Does it mean the end of the human world? Does it mean that all humans will die, or is this the potential day when humanity becomes enslaved by another, well, if you will, then another race, these demons specifically that we're talking about? Or what do you think the purpose is of this? Why do they want to have this event so much? And basically, why do you think they want to have this event happening?
Well, as for the Illuminati, their masters are stuck up in the pit of hell right now. So they want to get out. They've been stuck in this dimension for a long time, and that is reflected in almost everybody's literature, everybody's scripture. You're talking about the Bible, Necronomicon, Islam, you name it. They've been kicked out of an entire dimension, and they've been fighting to get out ever since. And the prophetic event of, you know, the release of the demons onto the earth is common among very many scripture and religions.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. What do you think?
They need us for food, so they're not going to kill us all together. They can't kill us all together because we are still a food source to them.
So you're into basically the Matrix analogy here, if you will. Then that they still want to preserve us in a pod, in a cell, in order to use us for energy purposes, and for that reason they need to keep at least a few of us, so to speak, alive. Then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. They definitely need to keep a few of us alive. We are a food source to them. They do want to bring down the population by a long shot. Everybody who's done any research knows that, but most people don't know why. It's basically they need to just keep a small percentage of us alive just for the sake of slaves.
And do you think they want to, because there seemed to be a very, how should we put it then? I think you bring this up in the film as well, that there's an obvious, you know, tension between these beings and human beings. It's almost like for whatever reason, they hate us for the fact that we have the ability to be in this realm, and it's a form of a jealousy at the base of this thing almost. It's a form of envy almost, that we have abilities that they don't have. But what do you think about that?
They're angry because they're so incredibly powerful. They're stuck in a kind of a backward, dark dimension, and they've got to serve these tiny, puny little humans, and so there's a lot of enmity. There's a lot of enmity altogether from the very beginning between our race and theirs. I mean, even like the first book of the Bible, Genesis, says that you'll forever be enemies. There's nothing to be done. That you're just going to hate each other. So they hate us because they consider us soft and weak, and we hate them because we consider them evil and uncaring.
Do you think we are soft and weak, or do you think that there's a way for us to battle these forces? In one way, then, many people on Earth now seems to do the bidding of these beings and in that sense then bring them in, which is, in that way, not a good idea then. But is there a defense here? Is there a positive magic, so to speak, that can be used against these beings as well? Or how do you approach this matter?
Well, every magician has a very healthy section. And every magic book has a very healthy section regarding banishments, because doing that job half is not acceptable. You're likely to have poltergeist activity in the house and stuff like that. We do have a couple weapons, and in fact, magic itself appears to be a weapon that was granted to us because we're so subject to them. We can't see them. They suck our they suck our energy source, vampiric psychic vampirism. They suck our energy straight out, and we have no weapons. So the Bible, for instance, doesn't really have like a distinct prayer that is used for exorcism, and you just kind of have to wing it. But Islam does have a couple prayers that can be said that can chase them off. As for like a weapon against all of them, or a weapon against stopping the opening of the bottomless pit, that is a little bit too much. That's not going to happen. That's a prophetic event. But yeah, the incantations that we have were apparently handed down to us as a weapon to counteract the fact that we can't even see them. We're completely subject to them in every way. So it appears to be like our weapon set.
That's interesting. And opening doors, stargates, we can talk about things that are happening on Earth now as well. We have the Large Hadron Collider, Atlas, or down at CERN, where they are doing some kind of interesting work there. They're searching for the God particle. For whatever reason, this has been delayed. There seems to be tremendous problems with this facility. There are obviously other particle accelerators and similar devices and technology around the world that are doing certain things. But I know that they have been, if you will, done refuted articles, so to speak, from the CERN camp that states that no, this will not open up a dimensional port. Demons will not be coming through just because of you know, the things that we do here. What's your take on some of the scientific research that is being done right now in terms of opening different gates and if you will, trying to go into other dimensions and trying to figure out what is in there and so forth?
Well, as for the technological, I don't know that much aside from a lot of what you just said. I do happen to know that they are waiting for a moment in order to open up this gate. So it's not completely dependent on our abilities to open up the gate. There's a celestial event that has to occur first, and then they get to come out. From what I've heard, the only gates that I've ever heard of were magical gates where, you know, you just didn't banish the demon correctly, and so there was poltergeist activity throughout the house or whatever. But I didn't I don't have too much information on the scientific angle, because they're still waiting for a celestial event. They can't really do anything before that.
So what do you think the celestial event is then? Are we talking about galactic alignments? Are we talking about other oddities that might take place in the sky? Or are we talking about something that might be a celestial event in another dimension even?
We might see it as a celestial event. We might see it in our own heavens, but it appears to be the collision of two dimensions that are normally kept separate. I don't think that just any kind of celestial alignment out there in the world can open up a portal. There's something special that has to happen first. You know, I mean, planets and stars, they align and disalign throughout the year plenty of times. But there is a specific celestial event that's to occur, and this one is going to give them the ability to finally get out. Whether they need something technological like a particle accelerator, I'm not quite sure. I've never heard of anything except a magical gate.
What do you think about the Norway spiral? I'm sure you saw images online and things like that, right?
Say again?
What do you think about the Norway spiral, this weird kind of blue...
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
What's your take on that? Yeah.
Oh, I swear, I thought... Until I saw the video, I thought that was completely Photoshopped. That just seemed a little bit much. I have no clue what they were doing. You know, I just saw that last night.
Yeah, okay, so, really. Okay. There you go. But the video is very interesting because to me it looks like a portal in that sense is opening up almost, like a black hole opening up inside the spiral if you look at the video. It's very strange. And again, the take that this is a failed Russian missile is, I feel in one way, is a cover-up. They definitely did some kind of testing. Okay, again, we might just look at some kind of advanced weaponry or laser devices or what have you, but it's just it's on a symbolic level. It's very, very interesting what we saw there, definitely. But in terms of that, basically what you're saying here as well, Michael, is that the beings here seems to be limited by restraint in regards to time as well, and that they have a certain amount of time where they are locked up, if you will, in the abyss, in the pit of hell, as it were, but something in terms of alignment or celestial event will unlock this, and they will be basically free to roam around. Is that how you think it will happen, or again, do you think that the human beings have a role in this as well? That there are certain human beings who are actually trying to open this gate at that specific moment or at that time?
Human beings definitely have a part to play in their release, and furthermore, human beings have a part to play in regards to preparing the world and preparing the mind for their coming. We are definitely going to do something that's going to make them come through. It's not entirely a celestial event, but at the same time, they do have to wait for that event. The Illuminati is definitely I think they've definitely got to do something else after that celestial event has happened, and I do think that they're going to induce this opening of the gate.
What can you say about the Islamic version, I guess, or take on this as well? They have a different name. They call these beings, the jinn, in English, we can almost translate that into genies, beings that grants us wishes and things like this, right?
Yeah, the jinn have the demons from the Necronomicon have a lot of parallels with the jinn. They whisper bad things into your head. They're subject to incantations and symbols. The jinn from the Islamic perspective are basically just free-flowing spirits that are wandering around. They whisper trouble into your mind. You know, they break up relationships. They cause suspicion. They miscarriages, illnesses, and they pretty much just roam around causing trouble. And so the Muslims say that we were appointed a guardian angel, what they call a malaika, in order to counteract that, because to each person is assigned a jinn. And so it's kind of unfair where you have a human who's already dark in his heart, and then you have the whispering of an even darker character. So I guess the guardian angels were assigned to us so that we would actually have a chance to do the right thing, I guess.
That's interesting. And so who is kind of presiding over all of this as well? Are we talking about God here, or are we talking about, you know, the universe? Or is there a being who have a more that is at the top of the hierarchy ladder here as well, so to speak, and is controlling all of this? Or is this just how should I put it? This is just an outcome of what happened when the universe was created, and this is just the laws that were set into place for this round? Or how do you view this? How do you approach this subject in terms of God and all that?
Well, that's certainly a matter of perspective in regards to religion. If you want to hear what they say, I can tell you that. They're not all bad. Not all the jinn are bad. The jinn that are bad are called shayateen, which obviously has its roots in Satan. But they're not all bad, and as for the jinn that are bad, they're called shayateen, and they are absolutely commanded by Satan, that they take their orders directly from Satan, regardless of whether they're bad or good. All of the jinn are the offspring of demons, and God has got enough power to assign us a guardian angel, but that really is just a matter of perspective. If you want to, the Muslims, they just say that, you know, there is a jinn for every person, and so there's a guardian angel for every person. Most of the jinn are, and this is backed up by many sources outside, but most of them are in deserted places. They're underwater, they're under the ground, they're in the air. Earth is a three-dimensional living quarters for spirits. We see it as a two-dimensional living quarters because we can only live on the surface for the most part, but they can live anywhere. And so they outnumber us 100-1, easy.
So we potentially are talking about underground civilizations as well, then, beings who are presiding inside the earth and things like this. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Necronomicon talks about it. Everybody's book talks about that. That's beyond discussion or question to me. There are absolutely a civilization or something going on beneath the surface of the earth. Whether that's, I think there are material beings under there as well, but I was just referring to the spirits in general, that they're even in the air. A lot of them even can float out into space and then come back. They see the earth as a three-dimensional place to live, and so there's just tons of them. And they're usually in places where we're not.
There is an interesting connection here in terms of other secret societies as well. At the end of your film, you mentioned a group, I think, that is called the Mhu Thul, basically. And they potentially then, according to the, I think it's the Necronomicon that you mentioned there, that they're behind the buildings of the pyramids and things like this. And this, of course, reminds me of the name Thul or the Thul Society. They were for the hunt for the Aryans. I don't think that this means white-skinned human beings in that sense. I think that they're talking about what is referred to as the shining ones, basically the glowing white people, if you will. What's your take on that, Michael?
Well, as for the Necronomicon, it said that it was a race of man. It could have been what you're talking about, the human-looking, but they're actually the old version of humans rather than the corrupted new version, I guess you would say. Or the they are actually the corrupted old. Either way, the Necronomicon says that it was a race of man who built it, and I found that very interesting too, that he even came to mention the pyramids and its construction methods. They said that some kind of ore is mined out of the earth, and this ore is heated up in lead containers, and it releases some kind of energy that perhaps makes large bricks even weightless. And
so that potentially would explain the building technique then, I guess, of some of the pyramids.
Yeah, you know, well, partly in other texts, like in Islam and the apocryphal book of the Testament of Solomon, you actually have the jinn who are making the temple and moving large blocks. So you actually have demons who are floating them around. So there's two stories out there floating around in the Temple of Solomon, and the builders of the Temple of Solomon were all demons. Or not all demons, but they were for the most part demons, and all the heavy work was done by the demons. And so, you know, they were forced to move large bricks. So, you know, there's two things that I've heard in regards to moving bricks into place.
Interesting, and that's one of them. And anything else in your research that has led you down into the road of the potential role, rather, than of the Thule Society? Again, we have this kind of occult branch, pre-national socialism in Germany, the Nazis, that were on the hunt for various relics. That they seem to have traveled around the world. They were in Tibet. They were looking for, you know, Shambhala, things like this, other cities. There are even alleged expeditions to the poles again to try to go into the earth and things like this. And I feel that by name, then, at least, connects very much to what you've been doing with the Thule people or the Thule Society in this case.
If the Thule from the Necronomicon is indeed the Thule from Hitler's group, I think that the Thule Society was started up, you know, right before Hitler really became anything. However, I am sure that Hitler was absolutely illuminated. He was aware of all these nine gates and all the stuff, and that's why he went searching. He didn't just waste soldiers. I mean, the guy was mean, but he wasn't an idiot.
So do you think that the whole, you know, the world wars in that sense have been orchestrated, and there's plenty of, you know, research pointing to this out there in the alternative fields, that the world wars are, in fact, orchestrated in order to, well, I guess, align not only the nations and the governments around the world towards a common goal in that sense, but also about the eradication of certain people. And in that, of course, not only the Jews, if you look at the Holocaust or other people, but also in terms of many Germans and Norse people as well, British people as well. There were so many people lost under the world wars, obviously. So there seems to be already at that place a culling of the human populace, if you know what I'm referring to here, Michael.
Yeah. World War II, for the most part, from what I've gathered, it was mainly about the setting up the United Nations and, you know, giving a good excuse for world government. But it could have easily been a sacrifice of some sorts. I mean, they were all just, you know, from head to toe with all these occultic symbols, and that surely wasn't by accident. Surely the people who put the symbols on there were aware of their uses and what those symbols are, and you will find a lot of those symbols in black magic. So it could have been like kind of like a mass sacrifice, but they really didn't kill enough humans relative to the portion for anything prophetic or anything real big. You know, I don't know if it was moving into some kind of stage other than a formation of a tighter world government than the League of Nations had to offer.
Yes, absolutely. And again, I think that the idea that you brought up about symbols there is very interesting and a good and an important point as well, that we have all these armies, young men in most cases, going out with various patches on their arms, swastika, some sun symbols, eagles, five-pointed stars, and all of this. And there's even research pointing to the fact that certain battles take place at certain, not only astrological, you know, times, but also actually on the map, geophysically on this certain spots on the earth, and that could be, if you will, then the way for the humans who are controlling these armies to signal to the demons on the other eye that on the other side of this that this is your sacrifice, this is your the people that we offer to you now at this particular time, and that's very interesting. What do you think about that, Michael?
It could very well be, you know, a sacrifice isn't a sacrifice until the character who's going to absorb it knows that it's for him. And usually, with a demon, for instance, you can only conjure a demon when a planet is in a certain place. And so having geographical significance, we know that they like to put their symbolism in architecture and stuff. So I wouldn't put it past them.
Michael, I'd love to continue talking more with you in our member section. I have so many more questions and points for you that I want to bring up. Specifically, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the various names, I guess, as well, and some of the properties that these hold. We'll get into that more later on here in the member section, but I do want you to mention your website for us, Michael. If there's anything else that you want to mention, please go ahead as well. But basically, so people know where to go, where they can check out your films, and they can, of course, download them for free directly on your website, Michael.
Yeah, I pretty much my website's HollywoodInsiders.net, and all my videos are for free. There's some of them are AVI files, and some of them are DVD ready to go. So it's all free. Just download. Nothing. I ask nothing.
HollywoodInsiders.net, very interesting material. It's well done. I like the music in a lot of your films as well. Are you behind some of that as well? Just want to ask you, curious.
No, nothing like that.
Okay, well, it's
very... I hear you do music, though.
Well, I do, absolutely. That's why I ask, because I really like some of the tunes that you have featured in some of your films. But it's very well put together, and again, I just recommend people to head on over there, HollywoodInsiders.net. Download some of the AVIs or check them out online. They're available on Daily Motion and other video sites as well. So do take a look. It's really interesting stuff, and we'll keep an eye on your work and research and how it develops, Michael. So I'll say thank you for the first segment. Stay with us then, and we'll continue talking more in our members area. That's our first hour with Michael Wynn. Join us for another hour discussing his work in our members area. We will specifically go into John D., Edward Keeley, Skyring and their system of Enochian magic, and the Necronomicon connection. We also talk about various deities or demons, Nylar Hothep or Asimodeus. We talk about Enki, Anu, Enlil, Ea Tiamat, Dagon, and many more. We also discuss mind control, more movies, actors, directors, and writers connected to all of this. We wrap things up talking about one of the secret teachings of the Illuminati, that of body transformation into the light body. What is this and how does it work? Can one soul jump from one body into another body? Is this how they keep an agenda going for thousands of years? Very interesting research from Michael Wynn coming up in hour two. Thank you for joining us. We have much more for you at redicecreations.com, and we will be back with more after this break.
You're listening to Red Ice Radio.